in this morning. And in the order of their presentation, they are Nick Johnson and James Chang versus Brewer and Pritchard Professional Corporation from Harris County, and Bruce Bradford and others versus Roel Vinto and others from Cameron County. In each of these causes, we have allotted 20 minutes for each side to present the oral arguments. And the petitioner may reserve a portion of that time for rebuttal by advising our marshal. We will take a brief recess in between the presentation of each argument and conclude these arguments well before lunch. Justice O'Neill is not sitting in the first cause, but she will rejoin us for the second argument. Audio tape of these arguments is available for purchase from a nominal fee from our clerk. Are there videotapes perhaps available from the University of Houston for a fee? The court is ready to hear argument from petitioner in the case of Johnson versus Brewer and Pritchard.
May it please the court, Mr. Grant Cook and Mr. William P. Maines will present argument for the petitioners. Petitioners have reserved 5 minutes for rebuttal. Mr. Cook will open with the first 10 minutes and will also present the rebuttal.
Want me to do that? I forgot to. What we're arguing about and what we're not arguing about. The issue before the court today on the fiduciary relationship issue is simply whether or not a fiduciary relationship existed between Brewer and Pritchard, the employer law firm, and Jimmy Chang, the at-will employee lawyer. What we're not here to argue about is whether or not Jimmy breached any such duty, because that is not a point before this court. The Court of Appeals held, following the Bray case exactly, that because Chang was an associate of Brewer and Pritchard, there was a fiduciary relationship between Brewer and Pritchard and Chang. We believe that to be in error. I also want to clarify something that's in the Court of Appeals opinion. It's noted that we, when I say we, I mean my client Johnson and Mr. Maines and Mr. McDade's client Jimmy Chang, that we did not challenge the breach of fiduciary relationship cause of action based upon a no evidence challenge. We did do that. It appears clearly in our motion, which is found at the clerk's file, Roman 1, page 22.
Mr. Cook, if an associate does not owe a fiduciary duty to the law firm that employs him or her, what obligations does the associate have to the law firm?
He has the same obligations that any employee has to its his or her employer, and that's in most of the cases stated as a duty of loyalty, a duty not to compete with his employer during his or her employment.
Could these facts then give rise to the breach of a duty, since the allegations in this case are that a business opportunity came to the associate and the associate kept that opportunity to himself rather than making it available to the law firm?
That certainly could be a cause of action, Your Honor, but it's not one that they sued
for. What cause of action would it be?
Usurpation of an opportunity of the company or the employer. I believe that is a viable cause of action against an employee, just as aside from a fiduciary relationship. But again, that is not one of the causes of action that they asserted in this case.
You said that Bray was incorrect. Why is Bray incorrect? Why
Bray's
should
incorrect.
There not be a fiduciary obligation here, a fiduciary duty in this kind of relationship between a law firm and its associates?
All right, sir. The reason that Bray is incorrect is the very same reason why this court ruled as it did in June in City of Midland versus O'Brien, where you ruled that you would not engraft a duty of good faith and fair dealing on an employer, because that would, I think the way the language of the opinion was, would interfere with the concept of at-will employment relationship, which is fixed in Texas with the Sabine Pilot exception.
But isn't this more like a principal-agent relationship?
No, sir, it's not. The record in this case is undisputed that Jimmy Chang was an employee of Bruin Pritchard. They have called him that repeatedly in their papers. There's no claim that he was an agent, and there's a distinction between an employee and an agent.
What is that distinction?
The distinction, Your Honor, is that, I'll read it, out of a couple of cases, the chief distinction between an agent and a servant is that an agent is employed to represent his principal in business dealings and to establish contractual relations between him and third persons, whereas a servant is not. That's Duke versus State, 725 Southwest 2nd, 289, and a case called Gulf Refining, an old filling station case found in 99 Southwest 2nd.
And as an example of that, associates typically are not empowered to enter into contracts on behalf of the law firm, are they?
I wouldn't think so, Your Honor. I mean, can you imagine an associate going out and signing a lease for new office space or hiring lawyers or office personnel?
Ma'am? Could an associate do a contract with a client?
I'm sorry, I couldn't hear
you. Could an associate do a contract with a client or a prospective client? For example, a contingent fee contract.
There's nothing in this record with respect to any particular rules. There's no contract with Jimmy Chang. Ordinarily, Your Honor, at least, and I don't know if we can take judicial notice of this, but I've never seen a law firm that will allow an associate to open a matter, much less a contingent fee matter, except with the approval of a partner. Now, we don't know. There is no evidence here insofar as anything.
That evidence make a difference then in this case, whether it was there or not, if this particular associate would be allowed to open a file, establish a relationship between the law firm and a client, then couldn't that make him an agent as opposed to a mere servant?
It might very well, Your Honor, if there were any evidence of that.
This record has no evidence of that one way or the other.
No, they call him an employee. They refer to his employment many times. In the record that appears in the record in Volume 1 at page 117 and 118, page 130, 133, and 141 of their reply to the motion for summary judgment, and in Mr. Chang's deposition at the record at page 46, that he was a non-contract employee.
What is the weight of authority from the other jurisdictions on this issue?
There isn't any.
There are no cases on point from any other jurisdictions on whether or not an associate owes a fiduciary duty to his or her law firm?
We haven't been able to find any, Your Honor. We didn't cite any, and neither did they. So I think you got some hard work by two sets of competing lawyers, and I think if there were, you'd see it in one or another of these briefs.
Let me ask you something. Are there any public policy arguments against imposing a fiduciary obligation or fiduciary duty between the law firm and their associates?
Yes, sir.
What is
the very same one that the court adopted in the O'Brien City of Midland case, and that is that we are an at-will state, at-will employment state. That is with the Sabine Pilot exception. And the court said in O'Brien, a court-created duty of good faith and fair dealing would completely alter the nature of the at-will employment relationship, which generally can be terminated by either party for any reason or no reason at all. And we accordingly decline to change the at-will nature of employment in Texas. Here's what would happen if Court of Appeals didn't say Jimmy Chang had a fiduciary duty to Bruin Pritchard. It said there was a fiduciary relationship between Chang and Pritchard. That's the same thing that Bray said. There was a fiduciary relationship between the associates and the firm, their employers. If that's true, then each of them would have a fiduciary duty in favor of the other. The hallmark of a fiduciary duty is to subserve one's interest behind those of his beneficiary, if you could put it that way. Put his interest ahead of mine, if I'm the fiduciary. The reason why this, if you rule that way in this case, the way they're asking you to, you said that good faith and fair dealing would alter the at-will relationship. Well, a fiduciary duty would destroy it because the employee couldn't quit for fear that he could be sued for putting his interest ahead of that of his employer. Say a lawyer wanted to go to another firm. The law firm says, wait a minute, You've been working here 2 years. We taught you how to be a lawyer. We've got a big investment in you, which we haven't been able to recoup. So if you leave, you're putting your interest ahead of ours.
But if we hold for your client, what would we be saying, that it's okay for associates to run cases on the side even when they're employed full-time by a law firm?
No, you wouldn't. You wouldn't at all, because it wouldn't be unusual and certainly be acceptable to have a contract. You see it in law firms, you see it in other professional engineering firms.
We would now be requiring firms, when they hire associates, to put them under contract?
Well, not necessarily. I think that if somebody is moonlighting, he's writing wills at home at night for his neighbors, and his law firm found out about it, I suppose they'd probably fire him, because they'd certainly be entitled to do so.
And it's okay to use firm resources and charge it to a business development account, and that would still be okay?
No, I don't. I think it'd be grounds to fire him, or that wouldn't. You don't need any grounds. But it would not create a violation of a fiduciary obligation. He might owe you back the cost of the Xerox machine or the fax charge, but that is not the same thing as a fiduciary obligation.
If I understand your position, you're saying to impose a fiduciary obligation is inconsistent with the at-will nature of the employment arrangement.
Yes, sir.
But partners have fiduciary duties to each other, and partnerships can, in effect, be at will. The partners can choose to no longer, there's nothing that binds the partners together. They could dissolve the partnership at any time. And that seems not to be inconsistent with the partners owning fiduciary duties. In fact, there's authority that says at some point the fiduciary duty ends because of the dissolution that's occurring. And then they get at arm's length for the negotiations on the dissolution. So how's the at-will necessarily inconsistent with fiduciary duty? If these people had been partners, it would not have been inconsistent with their ability to dissolve the partnership.
My answer for that is that the court has always, or maybe not always, but for many years, recognized there's a fiduciary relationship between partners. The reason for that is that each of them has the ability to bind the other. That's not true with an employer. That's true, like lawyer-client, fiduciary relationship. Lawyer has the ability to bind his client. Once the termination of a partnership is undertaken, then the Partnership Act kicks in, or the partnership agreement. So I don't think that's inconsistent at all, Your Honor.
Any other questions for Mr. Cook? Thank you, counsel.
Thank you.
In this case, we filed our motion, our no-evidence motion for summary judgment on six causes of action that were asserted by
Mr.
the Maines, firm.
Before you go forward with that, let me ask you a question. Why shouldn't we look at the professional relationship that exists between an associate and the law firm in a different light than the ordinary employment relationship, giving due consideration to the nature of the profession and the high ethical standards that the profession should abide by?
Because the law business isn't the only business where there are high standards of ethical conduct. Accounting firms have high standards. Investment banks have high standards. All professions ought to have high standards. The rules that govern the law profession, the disciplinary rules, are designed primarily to define the relationship between the attorney and the client. Once we get into the relationship between the attorney and his employer, the rules of the marketplace ought to apply.
And they should be no different for professionals than for anyone else.
They should not be any more different. And to establish a rule that says that they are different is to open a Pandora's box.
So if a client went to a firm and says to an associate, I'd really like to give this firm my business, and the associate says, oh, no, you don't want to do that. What you really need to do is give me the business, because I'm going to leave tomorrow and take it. Would that be all right?
Again, it would depend upon the nature of the relation that had been established between the law firm and the associate. I don't think what you're suggesting would be proper. I do not think that would be correct. But that's not what's being claimed here. What's being claimed in this record...
Would that be actionable?
It arguably might be the basis of some sort of claim. It would certainly be grounds for dismissal.
But you don't want
to. He's leaving. You're not going to get a chance to fire him.
Well, there,
you can't fire me. I'm gone.
There are no cases that we located where an employer has a remedy for damages against an employee for breach of some duty of loyalty, because typically what happens is the employee gets fired. There's not litigation that results.
This situation is not unique to the legal field. For instance, it could occur in the accounting field or in the investment field, where somebody brings in a multi-million dollar account and they say, I'm out of here, I'm going elsewhere.
That's exactly right. And the investment banking business would be another good example. Deals come in all the time that are hugely profitable deals.
And there is a way that law firms have to deal with this if they so choose, and that is to sacrifice their at-will power, and that is to encumber the associate with the contract.
Exactly right. That is exactly right.
So then you disagree with Mr. Cook when he says there could be a cause of action here. You don't believe there would be one. And in fact, what the associate really wants to do is be fired under those circumstances so he or she can take the case with him.
Well, my point is that it becomes a remedy question. What is the remedy? Here, the only remedy that was sought by the law firm was...
Before we get to remedy, we have to see if there's the breach of a duty. Is it your view that under those circumstances, there is no breach of any duty that could give rise to a cause of action by the law firm against the associate?
That is correct. It is my view that it might be a breach of a duty, but it is not my view that it is a breach of a duty which gives rise to a legal remedy for damages or disgorgement of a fee.
I don't understand the difference between that.
The difference being that we agree that an employee has a duty of loyalty. Any employee of a business has some duty of loyalty to the company. What is the remedy for breach of that duty? Under our law, the employer can terminate that employee's employment. That is the remedy.
That's no remedy. He could do that anyway. That's no remedy at all. You could always terminate a disloyal employee, but when they run off with the stuff, you want it back.
Then if that's going to be the law, if we're going to have law that says that, then we have to address what is the remedy for that breach. The only remedy that was sought here was disgorgement of the
fee. Well, let's talk about the implications, though, of this. I understand you're talking about this particular case. But my question to you is that Mr. Cook seems to think there could be a breach of a duty, if I recall his answer to a question asked earlier. If there is a breach of a duty, does that give rise to any cause of action? Can the law firm pursue a remedy for breach of a duty?
We do not think that it would give rise to a remedy for damages. There's no Texas case law that says that it would. There's certainly no Texas case law that says disgorgement, which is uniquely limited to a claim for breach of a fiduciary duty.
If the associate would not have had the opportunity for this potential business, but for his or her employment with the law firm, would that make a difference?
It would not make a difference. It wouldn't make a difference at all in terms of the remedy that might be available.
Mr. Cook had suggested that there might be an appropriation of corporate opportunity cause of action, where in the capacity that they were serving, they were presented with an opportunity that would be something that the business would be interested in, but they take it for themselves.
Correct. Yes, sir.
Now, if I understand your argument, well, that may or may not be a cause of action, but the result is you simply fire the person as opposed to require them to disgorge the financial benefit that would have been derived from the opportunity.
This court could extend the law of usurpation of corporate opportunity to this situation, to any situation. This court could do that. I agree with Mr. Cook on that. However, in this case, that would also require the court to get around the fact that the client in this case never consented to the referral fee. For there to be a usurpation of a corporate opportunity, the corporation must prove that it was willing and able to accept the opportunity that was usurped by the officer or director. They can't make that case here. That's probably why that case was never made in this case.
You said earlier that if we were to recognize a fiduciary relationship here, we would open up Pandora's box. Can you just elaborate on that?
In the sense, Justice Gonzalez, that there's no reason, and this is responsive in part to your question, Justice Hankinson, there's no reason to limit the rule that would be established here to the law profession. It would extend equally well to other professions, any profession that and hopefully all
maybe
professions.
Some people may view that as a good thing. Why? How is that opening up Pandora's box?
Because you're creating a new cause of action that is only going to promote create more litigation, first of all. And second, because, as Mr. Cook pointed out, it does fundamentally change the at-will employment relationship. The remedy here is to make a contract with the employee. If you want to change the at-will employment, do it through contracts. Don't impose legal obligations that don't otherwise exist.
I don't understand how it changes that, because a fiduciary can always quit. Trustee can quit. Attorney can quit. You don't have to represent a client forever just because there's a fiduciary duty there.
I agree with that. I agree with that.
Well, then how does it change it? The employee can quit.
By clarifying what the obligations are, by imposing higher obligations for higher pay, by giving commitments of partnership in exchange for further obligations, whatever the parties may deem appropriate to contract for. That's how you would change what would otherwise be an ordinarily at-will employment relationship.
Any other questions? Thank you, counsel.
Thank you.
Court is ready to hear argument from the respondent.
May it please the court. Mr. Martin Brewer will present argument for the respondent.
Again, do you agree with the petitioner that the only issue in here is whether there is a fiduciary duty of an associate to the partnership?
That is certainly the primary issue, and the court below correctly found that as a matter of law that duty existed. And what's disturbing about the argument that's being advanced by the appellants is that they're asking this court to make new law without telling this court that that's what they wanted to do. It has always been the law of this state that an employee owes a fiduciary duty to his or her employer. The seminal case of this court on that issue is the Kinsbach case. It's a 1942 Supreme Court case affirmed in 1992 by the case on which the appellants so heavily rely, and that is the Krim versus Navistar trading case. But they miscite that case for the incorrect proposition. So ever since at least 1942, the law in this state has been that an employment at will relationship exists very happily, very ably, side by side with the fiduciary obligations that the law recognizes as a matter of law exists between an employee and employer. Those relationships, by the way, don't flow both ways, as counsel suggests. There are many instances of fiduciary relationship where the beneficiary of the fiduciary does not owe a corresponding fiduciary obligation. A partnership would be the...
How does the case that we recently decided, City of Midland, affect your analysis?
It doesn't affect it at all because, first of all, it's not an employment context case. It was a case in which the court specifically said that the facts were the police officer suing for a breach of duty of good faith and fair dealing based on a retaliatory discharge claim. And the analysis, as I understand the case, did not even focus on the existence of a fiduciary duty of the employee to the employer. Rather, the police officers were claiming that they were owed a fiduciary duty or a duty of good faith and fair dealing by the police department.
Right, so but doesn't, why should that be unilateral? In other words, what if our court interprets the City of Midland case to mean that there is no duty of good faith and fair dealing owed by the employer to the employee? And I realize we didn't talk in that case about the converse relationship, but why should it not go both ways?
Well, for a number of really important policy reasons. First of all, it doesn't offend the employment at will doctrine because that doctrine only applies to how and when the employment relationship can terminate. Similarly, if you were to rule in favor of the appellants, you would be effectively condoning, rewarding, and even encouraging miscreant, dishonest, deceitful, fraudulent conduct on the part of an employee.
What you're saying is that employers can be deceitful, dishonest, and defrauding, but employees cannot.
Not at all. But what I am saying is that when it comes to the employee, if you allow if you overturn the first court of appeals in this case, you'd be allowing Mr. Chang and others like him to go out and run cases on the side in the context of a law firm. And I would submit to you, Your Honor, that the duties of a law firm, if anything, should be higher than we hold the rest of the corporate world to, which is the Kinzbach case.
Why isn't another cause of action more appropriate for these circumstances? As Mr. Cook was saying, usurpation of business opportunity, for example, some sort of business tort.
We actually pleaded a number of alternative claims, and of course, some of those are the basis for our cross appeal on the no evidence summary judgment. But it's coterminous, I think, with the breach of fiduciary duty claim to say it's a usurpation of corporate opportunity. That is the manner or the mechanism by which the fiduciary duty was breached. So he had a corporate opportunity, and incidentally, he's also a principal.
But you could have that cause of action without recognizing a fiduciary duty in the relationship.
So why should we create this new fiduciary relationship if you can have a remedy otherwise?
Well, again, because you're not being asked to create a new relationship.
Well, assume that we disagree with you on that, and I'm not saying one way or the other, but just assume that that's the case. Why should we take a step out and recognize a fiduciary relationship in this situation if, in fact, there are other causes of action that could address the conduct of the associate in these circumstances and the economic effect on the law firm?
Well, I think the answer to that is because the fundamental policy issue at hand, really, you cannot take it out of the fiduciary duty context.
You don't think there are any other causes of action then that could apply to these facts absent the recognition of a fiduciary duty?
Not adequately. I'm not saying that they don't.
What does not? I don't understand what not adequately means.
Because I think it's inadequate to require the law firm to find, or any employer, to find some independent cause of action and to say that the firm or the employer cannot look to the fiduciary duty obligation of the employee for asserting their cause of action.
I understand, but I'm giving you the opportunity to answer the question that if we disagree with you on that point, is there something else out there that could take care of these circumstances and protect the law firm from unsavory associates in their conduct that is less than appealable?
Well, to the extent that we pleaded alternatively, I think so.
Talk to me in generalities right now.
Generalities, yes. We've pleaded a whole host of other causes of action that are not necessarily dependent upon the establishment of a breach of fiduciary.
There could be other causes of action that could deal with these circumstances then under the law, absent the recognition of a fiduciary duty.
I would certainly think so.
Mr. Cook said that you have not alleged a principal-agent relationship. Is that correct?
No, Your Honor. As a matter of fact, I would call the Court's attention to page 7 of our response to the motion for summary judgment, which has a discussion of the affidavit of Mr. Patrick Goss, in which he specifically sets forth the facts by which he dispatched Mr. Chang to sign up this very case. And part of the real rub there is that it wasn't a total secret. The only thing that was secret about this was when Chang came back to Goss and Pritchard and lied and said, "I didn't get the case. The opportunity
escaped." My question is, have you all alleged as a theory of liability a principal-agent relationship?
I believe we did. And I think that it's important to understand, too, that the employment relationship really is a higher standard than just the principal-agent. He was acting within the course and scope of his employment, and he was specifically carrying out the agency that Mr. Goss had dispatched him to carry out. And so the point of that is that it subjects the employer law firm to civil liability, malpractice. I mean, it wouldn't do for us to say that we wouldn't be vicariously liable for any error or omission of our associate attorney on the grounds that, well, he ran that case on the side. We didn't know about that case.
If we find that there is a fiduciary relationship here, either because we created here or we agree with you that it exists already, do you agree or disagree that it's going to result in additional duties upon employers, thereby substantially altering the at-will relationship?
additional duties on employers?
Yes. We'll be creating additional, will there be additional duties on employers as a result of the fiduciary relationship between between the law firm and its associates?
No, I don't think so, Your Honor. I don't think it imposes an additional or different duty on the part of either party.
Should this also be applied to accounting firms?
Absolutely. The Kinsbach case, which is the case on which we rely, the Court of Appeals relied on it, this court relied on it in 1992. And by the way, the Krim case was a franchisee case.
Is there any employer-employee relationship to which this should not be applied?
I can't imagine what it would be. That was a case of a tool salesman who the court said was not really even acting within the course and scope of his duties, other than in the generic sense that he would do things from time to time that his employer would ask him to do. He came back and secretly made a profit by selling a product to his employer for this third party that the employer, it was undisputed, the employer wanted the product and was willing to pay the $25,000 that he did pay back in 1942, a lot of money. And so the court, I think, very interestingly put it this way, that it won't do for a fiduciary to say, well, you wanted it, you paid what you were willing to pay, and you have no right to complain. You have no damages.
So is it your view that this employee fiduciary obligation is going to apply in all employment circumstances or only circumstances involving professionals?
My position is that it has always been applied in this state to all employment contexts, and yes, it should be applied.
And the obligation always runs from the employee to the employer, and there is no corresponding obligation from an employer to an employee.
That's correct.
So the employer is in a position at all times to act in the true context of an at-will relationship, and now we've burdened the employee with obligations that run to the employer that are not, there is nothing corresponding that runs back.
I agree with everything you said, Your Honor, except that there's an additional burden. I don't think there is an additional burden to ask an employee to behave honestly and do his job within the course and scope of his duties.
Let's assume that we're uncomfortable applying this to every employment context, and we may be uncomfortable applying it to all professional relationships. Is there a reason or legitimate basis to limit it to the legal profession?
I think there is, actually, because after all, it is the legal profession that is vested with the responsibility of providing order to our society, to its clients' disputes and relationships, and we have to hold ourselves to a higher standard, and if we don't, it's about high time we start.
If Mr. Chang had left your firm without any kind of agreement with Mr. King, would that have been a breach of fiduciary duty?
Probably, because all of the facts, first of all, all of the facts are pre-termination, and I think that's something that's easy to overlook. Everything that happened here that we complained about below occurred during his employment.
And my question is, if he left your firm,
after the accident,
he left your firm before he had any kind of agreement with Mr. King, would that be a breach of fiduciary duty?
Yes, it would, because he obtained the opportunity while he was at our firm. If all of the conduct that we talked about occurred after...
Do you call obtaining an opportunity knowing about a personal injury accident?
Well, it was more than that, of course. It was knowing about the accident. It was getting the counsel and tutelage of others in the firm to sign the case up and all that went with it.
I'm saying he didn't do any of that. I'm asking you a hypothetical question.
Oh, I'm sorry.
I'm saying assume he did. He learned of the accident. He realized he might have the opportunity to sign that case up, and he leaves your firm. Is that a breach of the fiduciary duty?
So
he leaves your firm and then signs up the case.
If I understand your question correctly, if the only thing that happened is that he knew about the case, nothing else.
And he recognized he might have the opportunity to become referring counsel. So he leaves your firm and then signs a referral agreement. Is that a breach of fiduciary duty?
I'm not sure that it would be.
An attorney owes a client a fiduciary duty. A trustee owes it to a beneficiary. A partner owes it to another partner. Is that the same kind of duty that you say an employee owes an employer?
Yes, Your Honor.
To put the employer's business ahead of his own?
Yes, Your Honor, absolutely. And the difference, though, is that in a partnership, for example, and by the way, our law firm is not a partnership, and if you took the appellant's arguments literally, then the shareholder owners of the firm would not owe any duties to each other unless they were officers or directors.
Well, if a law school associate or any, or we talk about any other employee in a minute, but if a law school associate feels like, a law firm associate feels like that he or she is better than the firm thinks they are and wants to quit, that happens all the time.
Right.
That's certainly not in the employer's best interest. Their best interest is to keep them there, making not very much money and doing a lot of work. isn't it?
That's right.
And if you're an attorney for a client, you have to either do that or decline the representation. But if you're in that relationship, then you have to put the other person's interests ahead of your own. But I don't see how that's going to work in a law firm or in any other employment context.
If I understand what Your Honor is saying, the issue is an employee, whether he's in a law firm or any other firm, owes a duty of honesty and straightforward dealing to his employer, period. And that does not offend the employment at will doctrine. Mr. Chang was an employee at will of our law firm. He had the right to leave at any time for any reason or no reason, and he exercised that right. Similarly, we had the right at any time for any reason or no reason to discharge him.
So if he had come in and said, well, this has happened over the weekend, because of peculiar relationships here, it may be possible for me to sign this up in such a way that it results in me making a whole lot of money for a long time. If I were still here, you know, you might could do that. Maybe you could get the opportunity too. But why should you get it? I should get it. So I'm leaving, and that's what's going to happen. And that would be okay.
I don't know if that is okay, because and that goes back to Justice Owen's question that, you know, of course, that's not our facts. There's so much more to it than that. But, you know, the problem is that when
you're... Because if you're an attorney representing a client and you hear about a deal that your client could get and should get and would like to have, but you could get it for yourself, you're now tainted. There's no way you can do it, because you learned about it while it was in the context of that relationship. It has to go to the client. You can't quit and take it. There's nothing you can do.
I think that's right. I would feel very uncomfortable.
It's creating some serious problems. It almost seems as though a law firm could be a windfall of some tragedy of an associate. Take, for example, an associate whose uncle is in a catastrophic accident. And the associate realizes, so he does corporate law, is not going to be working on the case himself, but realizes that the catastrophic accident, if given to a great lawyer, could bring in $10 million. Knowing that, and knowing the opinion that you want us to write, the associate couldn't stay at the firm and then later leave. The associate tells the firm, look, I'm leaving because, look, I'm going to refer my uncle's case out, and it's going to bring in $10 million, $2 million of which I'm going to pocket. And what you're saying is, under those circumstances, because that catastrophic injury occurred while that associate was at the firm, that associate had the ability to farm it out the day after the accident happened, the law firm is going to get the windfall.
Well, Justice Abbott, I don't like the term windfall, but I think isn't the issue really the question of whether or not it was a corporate opportunity. If we go back to Justice Gonzalez's question, it's a corporate opportunity. If it's an opportunity that you become aware of during the course and scope of your employment, during the course and scope of an agency relationship or a partnership, then I think you have a serious problem if you say that you can know about that opportunity and get it ripe and ready to grab and then leave and owe no duty whatsoever to your partners, your employer, or your law firm.
Mr. Brewer, let me follow up with that. Let me describe what I think. Let's just see if I come up with a distinction. A fiduciary duty the client, the fiduciary, must put the best interests of their client ahead of their own. So a fiduciary that of a law firm, partner of a law firm, learns of, because they're on vacation with friends, and one of the friend's family dies in a tragic accident, they are aware through this friendship that they have this case that might produce substantial legal fees. A fiduciary would be required to take that to their client who's in that business, as long as they're the fiduciary. I would suggest the fiduciary could not even resign their office and take that case. And it has nothing to do with the course and scope of their employment. It just has to do with the person that they owe the duty to is in that line of work. The fiduciary hears about it through a friendship. I suggest the fiduciary could resign because that's too great a price to pay. But even in the act of resigning, they could not take that case. They had to refer it to their fiduciary. Now let's talk about an employee. An employee of a law firm, not through the course and scope of their employment. They are not at the front desk when the case comes through the door. They are on vacation with a personal friend, and the personal friend has a disaster. I suggest that the employee could quit and go work with a friend to develop that. And they would not have breached their duty of honesty with the employer because the case came to them not through the course and scope of their employment, but through their friendship. In fact, isn't a corporate opportunity issue one of the elements that the opportunity presented itself to the individual in their capacity as the employee for the business, and they took it? And isn't that an element that's missing here, that if there's a determination of fiduciary relationship, doesn't need to be provided? And isn't that a distinction between the honesty of an employee to the employer and the obligations of a fiduciary to the person to whom they owe the duty?
I think that distinction is largely correct, except for one thing, and that is that in the example of a law firm in particular, it's very clear and I think easy to describe and identify the scope of the employment, which is really the crux of the distinction I think Your Honor was trying to bring. And that is that, let's face it, as members of the bar, we're members of the bar 24 hours a day. I'm a member of the bar when I go on vacation. And if I go out of town on a frolic with a client, and by the way, Mr. King had been a client of our firm, which is another thing that the appellants like to disregard. He had been a client of the firm. They're personal friends, no question about it. They've gone off together. Clearly, he's talking to him as a lawyer. There's no dispute about that. And so I don't think, as a practical matter, you could ever make that distinction, at least not in the case of a law firm where it's so clear what the duty is and what the scope and course of the employment is.
So, just so that I'm clear on this, so it would not matter if Mr. Chang had said nothing about this to a partner at the firm. It would not matter. Let's say Mr. Chang had not used any firm resources. Mr. Chang simply left, and a year later your firm found out about the fact, about this other litigation. You would still say that there was a breach of fiduciary duty?
Yes, sir, I would.
Any other questions? Thank you, counsel.
Thank you very much.
Mr. Cook?
Yes, sir.
Why does Kinsbaugh not weaken, if not do in, your position?
Because Kinsbaugh and Thigpen and Krim were all cases where the plaintiff contended that a fiduciary relationship had been established by reason of what the courts usually call a long-standing confidential relationship, and examined facts, confidence obtained and abused, influence acquired and abused. There can be fiduciary relationships created that way, and that's the way it was in Kinsbach. In Krim, the court said that they submitted those issues to the jury. Did they create a confidential, a fiduciary relationship? And the jury said no, and this court, the Court of Appeals, said the evidence upheld that. That's not what we have here. We attack their fiduciary duty, a fiduciary breach claim on based on there isn't one, and you have no evidence. Had they come in and put forward some evidence like they did in Krim and like they did in Thigpen, although unsuccessfully, then that might have created an issue right there as to whether or not there was a fiduciary duty created. Here, they said, no, Bray says, just because it's an associate in a law firm, there's a fiduciary relationship.
Let's assume I'm a geologist, and I work for a company working at prospects, and I find a prospect that I think is very likely to produce oil or gas. I leave my employer and round up some investors and go drill. And sure enough, it's a successful well. Have I breached any kind of duty to my employer, my former employer?
You very likely have created a cause of action in behalf of your employer for interfering with a prospective business relationship, and that's a cause of action. The reason I suggest they didn't claim it here is there's a lot more issues that they have to jump over to make that case, malice for one. But yes, ma'am, I think that would be a cause of action.
So you're saying if we rule in your favor and they go back and replead, claiming that through the course of dealings and because of the nature of the relationship and because King was a former client of the firm and because this case was worked on while the person was still at the firm, that had gone far enough to establish the course of dealings that established a fiduciary relationship that would invoke, say, Kinsbaugh.
I think they might be able to raise that fact issue, Judge Abbott. Yes, I do. But they haven't made the cause of that. I mean, they haven't made that. Here, we're here coming off of a no evidence motion, but yes, sir, I think so. But you look at Krim and look at the facts in Thigpen versus Locke. I mean, those people were tight, and the court said, there's not enough evidence to create a fiduciary relationship. Say, and so did the Court of Appeals, that they said that, well, that's only relevant to suits involving referral fee agreements. That's not true. We cited in the trial court, and it appears at volume 1, page 36 of this record, an ethics opinion number 459 in 1988 that stands for the proposition that the rule in those days, it was 107, now it's 104, and recodification since then, that the sharing of fees by lawyers at different firms can only happen if the client is advised of and does not object.
Is there any evidence that Mr. King was advised of and did not object to Mr. Chang sharing in the fee?
Mr. King, the evidence on that is that Mr. Chang wasn't going to chair any fees, and Mr. King.
Any evidence
The only evidence is Mr. King said, "I objected to Brewer and Pritchard sharing any fees." This ethics opinion said that a law firm had a contract with its associates that said, "If you leave, you will give us a percentage of all the fees you collect in the future from any clients that we represented while you were here." The ethics opinion says, that's not enforceable. Let me just close by talking about the equity. If Jimmy Chang had been in this helicopter instead of Mr. King, and he's an associate, and he hired Nick Johnson, and Nick Johnson associated Joe Jamail, and everything else was the same, and he didn't leave the firm, they say he had breached a fiduciary obligation. I don't think that's right. The Bray case says fiduciary duty based on public policy to instill confidence in the public and the legal profession. The result they seek would hardly do that in this case.
Any other questions?
Thank you, Judge.
That concludes the argument in the first cause. The court will now take a brief recess.
Please rise.